for sure.
All right, we'll go ahead and open up this planning committee meeting, council, today. Thank you all for being here. Now that we have all of our committee members well-fed and in good mood, we'll go ahead and proceed. Start off with item number one, the approval of minutes from the February 29th, 2016 meeting, February 22nd, 2016 meeting, and the March 15th, 2016 special meeting. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And then motion passes. All right, item number two is public comment. However, I would like to move that public comment further down the agenda and let comments be taken for each individual item.
Sounds good.
Thanks, sir. I'll move on to item number three, which is the budget review for 2016-2017. And I will turn this over to our administrator, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll flip to the planning department tab. Planning department budget being proposed is very straightforward. It's very lean. In fact, if we take out the wage plan and the health insurance allocation, this budget in front of you would be less than it was the prior year. There are two new positions being asked for in the salary line item. I did discuss these at the budget overview. One is a high-level planner position, which its idea came from this body, and also a plan review technician, which we believe is going to be instrumental in having greater, more efficiency in that area. That's in your salary line item. I mentioned health insurance. Memberships and dues is up a little bit for some arborist certifications. And you see the additional employees that affect in memberships and dues, and a little bit in employee training as well. And really after that, there's not much. Vehicle fuel is down, contractual services are down. It's a very good budget, and I commend Ms. Farrell for that. On the capital side, there are just two replacement vehicles, and one's like a Ford Escape type SUV, and another is a pickup truck. That's it.
It's all that wear and tear coming back and forth from here to 6 months, right?
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Any comments from the committee? Questions?
It's pretty tight.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good, man.
Still trying to digest. Need an approval of that, sir?
Yes, sir, please.
I move to approve as presented.
Second. All right, motion and second. I'll open up the public comment.
Okay. Yeah, Linda Page, 1458 Short Street. The only thing I didn't see included in the budget that I'd like you to give consideration of was a conversation that we had about an event similar to the recreation department's event where they honored their volunteers, and I know they have $3,000 in their budget for that annual event. I know they have more volunteers than we have, but our commissioners and our committee members, those volunteers of our public who work so hard, certainly deserve something. I wish you'd give some consideration to maybe some oyster roast or some event that the committee could come up with or consider.
Yes, Mayor, I'm glad you brought that up, as a matter of fact, because we had discussed almost like an oyster roast type situation at the waterfront park where you could recognize annually all the boards and commission members. As a matter of fact, I might have emailed you something out way back when. I can't recall. I'm going to ask some help from Marcy. Do you recall if we put an allocation of money in the budget for that?
We increased one in some line in your budget. Let me see if I can find
that. Well, if it's okay, Mayor, in the spirit of what you said, we'll see if it's in there. I think it is. If it's not, we'll bring it back for the budget committee.
I reviewed the budget fairly well, and I might have missed it, but I certainly appreciate that. I just want to make sure we honor those folks that work so hard to make recommendations to us.
Great. That's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any additional discussion from the committee? Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you. All right, so moving on to item number four, review of the Planning Commission recommendations from the March 23rd, 2016 meeting. And welcome back, Ms. Farrell, from her travels, and I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, and we only have one thing coming from the Planning Commission.
Okay.
the first piece of property that is referenced on the agenda, that's items A and D. So it's an annexation and it's a zoning, and the zoning is what went in front of the planning commission. So to begin with, this piece of property is located off of Joseph Glover, off of Bessemer Road, that more people are probably familiar with. There is a map up on the screen. It does abut the Andover subdivision in Arlington, I'm sorry. It's Andover Way Street, Arlington. Arlington subdivision in Parkwest, and will be incorporated, as we understand it, with there's something already under development, under development right here, and so this is kind of the back half, probably on part of that. Planning commission, well, let me back up. First, this is annexation, so that's in front of committee only.
I move for approval of the annexation.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion?
Typical standard question comes with that. Pretend everything around that already in town?
Yes, sir. A good bit of it is not still in the town. To the back of that is all that hatch pattern is the Phillips community, which is still in the corner.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to item B.
That is the zoning that went in front of the planning commission. The requested zoning is R1, which is consistent with the zoning on the portion that's already in the town of Mount Pleasant and is currently, the infrastructure is currently being installed in that portion. So this will be the same, be added to it. They'll have to come back later with a sketch plan and preliminary plat for the development of it. The planning commission reviewed it and they've recommended approval of the R1 zoning.
I move for approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Any public comment on this item? Christine, just one question for you on this. It looks like the construction on the front portion has slowed down for some reason. Do you know if this rezoning would impact that sketch plan or the sketch plan for that front part of the parcel?
They will have to make an adjustment to it in order to provide access. So it will be some sort of modification, but we don't know yet because we haven't seen anything for this portion that's in front of you.
Thank you. Anything else in the committee? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item C.
Next item you have is only an annexation, so no zoning is being requested with this. This piece of property is off of Alice Smalls, which is off of Old Georgetown Road. And so you can see it, the properties highlighted on the map that are proposed for annexation. It's a total of just under 3 acres. There are properties on the opposite side of the road that have already annexed into the town of Mount Pleasant. And so, the ones that are in green. So almost the entirety of Alice Smalls will now be in the town. They have not requested zoning with any of this along the way. So they will be subject to the standards for community conservation and also be part of the Swift Cross Basket Overlay District. So 12,500 square foot lots in this area. They will be working with staff regarding some improvements to Alice Smalls Road, which does not meet our standards, but that's something that will occur within the development process. And so this is just annexation of these properties with CC zoning is automatic.
Approval annexation.
Sorry. Motion and second. Discussion from the committee, please.
Christiane, the pieces across, do you know they're already in town? Do you know if they already have water and sewer?
No, sir, I don't know if it's been installed.
Mark, you wouldn't happen to know the status of water and sewer. It's in the old Georgetown area. And the reason I'm asking, Fulton's just to the south, the bigger green one. This area here is just getting primed to be annexed one after another. The opportunities here to do some good things. And maybe you can just follow up later on with where water and sewer is for this section.
Yeah, it's certainly there because Fulton is already well, they've got homes that are occupied, and that's what he's highlighting right there, all of those great properties. And so it is available, I believe, off of Old Georgetown, but I don't think it's been extended down Alice Smalls.
It would alleviate a lot of septic tanks.
Any public comment? Hearing none. We have a motion and a second on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Moving right along to item number 5, consideration of ordinance regulating mobile businesses. Ms. Farrell?
I'll be glad to speak to it. I know that Mr. Reedy actually drafted what sometime you and I can introduce it, not make the final.
Just a little bit of background, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, well, this was in front of committee 1 to 2 months ago, recall. And we received redirection from council to move forward with drafting ordinance that would allow for mobile businesses and directed legal to do so. And that's what's in front of you today. And we've spoken, and I can probably answer a little bit more of some of the zoning aspects that may be part of it.
And it essentially is modeled after our food vendor ordinance that was passed a few years back, so we've made appropriate changes. There's three basic changes. One, we've added a definition for mobile vendors. We changed or specified the zoning areas where it'd be permissible. Christina can speak to that. But if you look at the draft, there's a number of conditions, and those conditions generally relate to what we can sell. We don't want anyone staying overnight or at one location. We put 28 days, but obviously that would be a discretionary issue for y'all. That just seemed like something that we felt was appropriate. We wanted to avoid someone having a permanent mobile vending location, I guess is the better way to put it. Also, signage is limited to essentially what you can put on the mobile vending unit. So, you know, we anticipate the worst, and I guess you can see a big unit with a giant sign on it driving around town. So we limited in that respect as well. There would be a required permit through the planning department. Of course, they'd also require a typical and standard business license. So I think those are the highlights of it. You look down the conditions, I don't think there's anything concerning or controversial, but it's really a matter of preference and what you all would like to see.
Discussions or questions from the committee?
If you elaborate a little more on the rationale behind the number of days, talk a little bit about that, where that came from.
Yeah, and
how you landed on that.
How we landed on it was essentially, I think, are there other areas of our code that use 28 days? I'm not sure, but really it just was, you know, a month was really enough, we thought, but that certainly can be reduced, so I'd be hard-pressed to give you any solid rationale for that, other than we felt that any longer than that was just too long. But I think there's a reasonable basis for it. I think if you get out there for that period of time, it becomes more of a permanent location.
Yeah, there were two things with this. So first of all, addressing that it cannot stay overnight.
Right.
That's not something that's addressed in the mobile food vending ordinance because the food vendors are required by DHEC to go back to their base operation every night.
Right.
And so we did think it would be appropriate to not have something set up around the clock, first of all. And so that's why not allowed to stay overnight. And then the other number is something that I have offered, you know, 4 weeks. It's basically a month there, and it certainly can be adjusted. But the thought is that this type of use is temporary at its location and not to set up permanent shop. And so I think we need to have some sort of number on it to regulate it. And I thought that seemed like a fair and reasonable number for 4 weeks.
I just asked a question, and I don't have a preference or any number in mind that I'm advocating for. Just would be concerned about the unintended consequences. I guess rather than talking in theory, I'd like to maybe put an application, for example, so we, ahead of time, so we're not having to revisit it later. And I'm stretching to come up with an example to come up with, to feel good about that 28 days, when it could be something that would be seasonal. Maybe the coffee tender across from the farmer's market, or there were on private property next to the farmer's market that was there. We're saying it would be limited to 28 consecutive days that they could be there, when the farmer's market may run for through the season. Right? Could they not be there for 3 days and then 28 days starts all over? How do you regulate that, or what would be your interpretation of that?
We don't. And I thought about that.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly I could see somebody maybe doing that. Well, I'm not here today, but I'll be back, you know, on sick day. And that's the kind of thing that I think that we don't know it until we see it, and it may be something where if it becomes a problem, that we may have to come back and revisit it.
Took 28 days, a month does seem like a long time, but for a season, 28 days can come pretty quickly. And not be long enough. And I'm in favor of creating some regulation, but again, I'd want it to be a win-win for everybody.
Well, the coffee thing would, of course, fall under the mobile vending, food vending already, so they're already regulated more by DHEC, so than us. So this is somebody who was selling clothes.
Right.
Yeah. Just a couple.
Thank you.
Help me out here. Our food trucks now, they're not operating. They're on private property. You have to get someone's permission. This follows the same suit.
Yes, sir. We put written permission in there as well, and we would anticipate that would be part of the application process to our planning department.
And I don't wish, I don't talk about this last month. I'm not trying to pick on this. It's just front and center, everyone sees it, but it's a perfect example of seasonal. The peanut dude, he's there in permission with the Gregory family, but he's there easily 5-6 months because of the season. I don't want us to get into the goo of approving something when someone's doing something else.
Would he call him? He's on a truck, so he wouldn't follow.
No, he does. He's still a truck. It's a trailer.
Who brought this up? I like his peanuts.
Yeah, and so the two examples we keep pulling up, Mr. Chairman, are we keep defaulting to food. Maybe, is there another example that you could paint a picture for us just so we can move forward with it that that we've seen in the past? I mean, this came up, I believe, as a clothing sales.
One was clothing, and the other one was more, those were the only two, and we certainly have other people, and this is why we've written a prohibition here in outdoor display, because we've had other folks who just, maybe I'll probably remember for a long, long time, the guy on 17 at Isle of Palms Connector who stood there and carved his wood. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing we've written a prohibition for. So the only two examples, the only time we've really encountered it were those two, which is more recent.
Christmas trees also still be exempt from this.
That's considered a temporary use, since we already regulate Christmas trees, fireworks, things like that are in that part of our code and are audited at that.
Newspaper sales, ice cream cones.
I'm okay with the 28 days. I would suspect that people will rent, rent a spot out on their parking lot or whatever for the truck to park there. And, if it's an ongoing business, they're going to rent that space. I would think so. And then when that's done, it's going to take a little bit for people to know that it's there and what's going on. But it's good to have a limit at the end so that, if there's friction between the landowner and the person of business, they know that there's an end, it's like next 28 days.
Mobile.
Anytime.
If there were quite a few trucks too, I mean, the nature of this business is to want to be typically at different locations almost every day.
Well, but, you know, there'll be someone who'll figure they can do a, I won't do brick and mortar, but I'll be right here for the rest of my life, and this prevents that from happening, so I think 28 days is good. But it's enough to, you know, people are used to the fact they're gonna be there, but there's a sunset.
I'm fine with trying this out.
Okay, I'll make the motion to approve the mobile business ordinance that's been submitted.
I'll second
the council approve.
I'll second it.
And this would be a recommendation to send this to the planning commission.
Oh, okay.
We will have to go through that process.
But it'll have to go to council.
Yes, you will. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Got it?
Is there anyone here who'd like to make a public comment on this item? Seeing none, go ahead and vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. All right, moving on to item six. This is consideration of several items. Accessory dwelling units, multifamily units, setbacks, permitting, and residential densities and growth management plan. And, I'll turn this over to committee member Mr. Eustace.
Okay. Yeah, just have not a malfunction. I let the computer go to sleep so that I can keep all these. Just to preface this, let me just explain that over the last few months we have discussed at length all the topics that we're going to that I'm going to make a motion on, and I'm going to make a motion on these one at a time, and it's for these reasons. We know that all we have to do is drive around, we know traffic's bad. most disconcerting to me is that we have 30 portable classrooms in the schools north, although we understand we're not responsible for the school district. But the students in those schools are our residents. Also, our recreation facilities are becoming strained, and our town staff, we're looking at make sure we have sufficient people and equipment to maintain the quality of life for some 80,000, approximately 80,000 people. So in light of all those things and the discussions we've had, I have come up with about a half dozen motions that I'm gonna make. And you know, I understand some of these are, and as a matter of fact, all of them may not get a second. And I understand that, and they'll go to council, but I think we need to, right now we're kind of on high center with these, and we need to make some motions to move them ahead. And the first is, and these are for inclusion in our growth management plan. The first motion I'd like to make is that there be a moratorium on multifamily apartment development. Okay. Hearing no second. I'll move on.
Moratorium on
multifamily apartment development.
Okay. No second from the committee.
Okay. And that'll go forward with without a second. The ADUs be banned in areas not banned by homeowners associations. And primarily, and that's in the form of a motion, but by way of explanation, ADUs in the old part of Mount Pleasant, in those areas without homeowners associations, have become rentals. They've driven up the density in portions of the town, and also they stand up, they're 25 feet tall, and some of them are within a 3-foot setback of the property line, which just I feel detracts from the neighborhood. So that is the motion.
All right, I'm going to second that for the sake of discussion. I tell you, I don't support
what you're asking. But I have something I want to talk about with ADU.
Sure.
Therefore, give us some discussion, Steve.
Okay, motion and a second, then. Other discussion?
Sure. When we had our meeting last on accessory dwelling units and also short-term rental, it was at that time for me that we had them together. Because I was heavily involved in our accessory dwelling units, which I'm very much in favor of. But I have a, I don't know, it gets into a legal loophole. I detected that we're utilizing ADUs or people trying to use them for short-term rentals. And I just have to say that was not the intent. I realize I'm opening up a box, but I just want to put it out there. Mr. Pagliarini, if you want to take some time. It's going to come back up, I know, at the council meeting, that item. I just wanted to state it. Again, I'm not going to support banning accessory dwelling units, but I just want to use the opportunity to say that I recognize that. I had not recognized it before.
Thank you, sir.
And I would add to, and this is not, well, I'll get to the next one. It's recognize the difference between auxiliary dwelling units and, or accessory dwelling units and accessory buildings. Two different things, and you're right. And this would still allow folks, if they want to put a mother-in-law suite on their house rather than a separate building, that they could do that. But as a separate building over the garage within 3 feet of their neighbor's backyard, I think is inappropriate.
And I'll just add that I may find after Mr. Pagliarini looks into it that there's something that we can't control that. If I'm going to be in a position to allow an ADU, then it'll allow someone to do a short-term rental. You know, I'll have to come to an understanding of that. I just, again, when we spent all that time several years ago, that part didn't come to us.
Yeah, and please understand, this is not addressing short-term rentals. This has nothing to do with short-term rentals
right.
at all.
I know.
Thank you. Other comments?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that I'm not going to support a ban on ADUs because I like them, but much like item number one, which is a ban on apartment, I think there are issues and problems that might need a more specific remedy. maybe about the use of a scalpel instead of a butcher knife. So I think these bans are probably not the best way to go, but I certainly think what we're talking about is really valid, and I think we have another motion that may address part of this. So I'm not going to support the overall ban, but I do think, as I mentioned in the last planning committee meeting, I do have some concerns about the setbacks and some of the uses. So that's part of the
sure.
Public comment on this item.
This reminds me of something on the national debate and what came out in the committee's hearing not too long ago. Was things have changed since this was originally, like you just said, ADUs originally came out. And one of the members of that committee, a member from the public, spoke and said short-term rentals weren't even in the picture when they were designed. And so to sort of add a national slogan to it, maybe repeal and replace. Because one of the things that struck me sitting in that meeting was I didn't realize you could go up 25 feet. So you could be in a neighborhood of various, you know, one-story houses, and you can go up 25 feet. And you're entitled to 850 feet, and I think two bedrooms, is that right? One kitchen, whatever it is. But in other words, you can live in a 900-square-foot house and build an 850-foot ADU, square-foot ADU. And I just think there's no proportionality. And so with height, setback, and proportionality, maybe it's not the end of, if you vote for this motion, maybe it's not the end of ADUs forever, but we can come back with something that doesn't entitle everyone, regardless of the character of their property or their neighborhood, to the exact same height, setback, and square footage.
Thank you, sir. Any other comment? Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. Motion carries 3-1.
Okay. Third, that the setback for all accessory buildings match setbacks for normal zoning. In other words, no setbacks of only 3 feet close to within the property line. And this would be whether there's an ADU at the top, a garage, or whatever. I just think some of these, I've seen even the accessory buildings with trees and different things, that's just too close.
All right, I'm going to second that for the sake of discussion as well, because I want to get Christiane involved in this discussion.
Sure.
Because it's going to come, obviously, I know, next Tuesday night, which is fine. So Joe, and Christiane, you're familiar with Mr. Bustos has asked. He wants a setback.
No, not to have 3 feet.
You want to have setbacks that are same as the existing structure. Just tell us all why we have a difference, and is this something that we can do?
Well, yeah, you certainly could do, but we do have, we explained the setbacks for accessory structures, first of all, a little bit further than what we talked about last time. The 3 feet that we were talking about last time only applies in certain areas, in certain zoning districts. So what's called the SR2 overlay district, which is kind of really the Indian Village area, which was a zoning district that was created in, I don't know, mid-2000s, where there was a lot of renovations, people trying to add on and things like that. And work within their existing property lines, we ended up doing a setback reduction not only for the accessory structures, but also the front yard setback. The other place where you have 3 feet is RTH, so townhomes, and R4, which used to be a patio zoning district. If the 3 feet is eliminated, then what we have elsewhere throughout the town of Mount Pleasant, so the groves or somewhere like that, the accessory structure is setback 6 feet. So I don't know if that's what you were proposing, that everything go to the 6 feet, because if we do go into the setback for whatever the district is, you're talking, well, quite frankly, almost impossible to build a swimming pool, for example. If you have to maintain a 20-foot setback or a 30-foot setback, depending in your rear yard, depending on whether it's R1 or it's R2 or something like that. So, you know, our accessory structures will include things like a greenhouse or a swimming pool or a pool house or your shed. All those things are accessory structures. And so I don't know if you meant to...
Six feet is where I'm going with this, okay. Because 6 feet is reasonable if a person can go around the side of their accessory building and do work. Because, you know, we have instances where there's a fence 3 feet and folks who want to work on their accessory building have to go in the neighbor's yard to get up to the roof and all that, and have time to work on the roof shingles. Goes in the neighbor's yard. I think 6 feet is reasonable that people can get in and maintain what they have. 3 feet, you know, you can't stand a ladder up against the side of the building if you have to. And that may be something that's more common in the older parts of that project than the newer. So I think six is. Although I say normal, 6 feet is what I'm looking for.
Mr. Garrett, any other questions?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Okay. Other questions or comments in the committee? Anybody in the public who care to comment on this item? Okay. Got a motion and a second on the floor. Ready to call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Okay. It's tied to two.
Okay, you ready for the next one? Number four is that there be a limit of impervious surface in areas lacking adequate drainage. Here again, what we're finding in different areas across Mount Pleasant is small houses or buildings being taken down, replaced by driveways, larger houses, and because some of these roads were state roads and didn't have or don't have drainage, whoever happens to live at the lowest spot along the street gets flooded. So I think the only fix to that is, since we don't have a pot of money to go install drainage that we try to get people that are, we need to ask zoning to come up with an amount of, and perhaps increase it, that we have pervious surface to keep water from running out into the street and down the streets to the lowest point. So that's an informal motion that we ask planning to see if they can come up with a limit of impervious surface for construction in these areas.
I'll second before you say any discussion. Motion and a second. Ms. Farrell, can you talk about what's currently in place in terms of controlling the amount of impervious surface?
Well, we do have limits within our zoning districts that specify lot coverage or building coverage, and it varies depending on the district. The smaller lots usually are allowed a higher smaller by zoning, and I clarify, like an R4, would have a higher amount of lot coverage that would be allowed as opposed to something like, say, R1. So ranges 35% to 50% in terms of the lot coverage that's typically allowed. And I don't know that you're talking just commercial or
This is primarily residential, because, you know, commercial has to have retention ponds and one thing or another, where in neighborhoods that's not necessarily the case.
Okay, well, that's in the zoning code already with these regulations in terms of the amount of coverage that's allowed. The second thing to at least speak to is when we do get redevelopment plans or renovations or expansions within some of these older neighborhoods, or sometimes even within some of the new neighborhoods, we will request some sort of drainage plan, and that's reviewed by our engineer, our town engineer, in connection with whether the building plans are to ensure that through most of the time it's concerns related to the adjacent property and the impact that it's going to happen or could happen through bringing in fill and degrading and things like that to the adjacent property. But it is at least another level of review. So those are the two things, at least now, that we have in place if it's an existing neighborhood. Of course, anything new is pond systems and things like that.
And what I'm asking here is that we would do that, because we are starting to have these incidences of flooding, and believe it's related to the amount of impervious surface, because the houses are bigger, the driveways are bigger, the walks are bigger, and while we have a percentage, it may be too great a percentage that is allowed with impervious.
Any other comments from the committee?
I do. I got to, I'm going to deviate a little bit. Mr. Morrison, you awake back there? Good. This is important. It's not so much tied to, Joe, you talking about an individual house. We all know everybody's responsible for their own watershed. Granted, you know, if there's a couple of vacant lots, you have to look at how that's going to, you know, what it's going to do to a street. In the old village, Indian Village, for example, if there's several lots left, there's definitely some low areas. But Brad, the reason I asked if you were awake, you know, I've seen more than four or five times now that the reason we have flooding on Coleman Boulevard is because of all the overdevelopment. That's not the case. All those people maintain their stormwater. The reason we had flooding issues on Coleman Boulevard is because DOT widened the road and they didn't put in larger pipes. Wouldn't you agree with that, Mr. Morrison?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
Anybody from the public who care to comment?
Good evening again, 1307 Wilson Crest. Public services, I asked our director if this was somewhat of an issue, and although it was not in the context of this motion and this ordinance, it is something that at least take a look at, because if there are parts of towns like in the old village when they put in roads, they didn't do drainage systems. And stormwater runoff was not an issue. It's not just the lot coverage of houses and roof lines, but it's these long, big paved driveways, and you got aprons, and then you got places where they're tearing down or expanding. So I would just ask the committee to at least direct staff, let's look and see what our lot coverages are for impervious surfaces, and who knows, maybe everybody start going to pervious concrete, which is a great thing too, from a conservation standpoint.
It's not very structurally intact, though.
Just to remember, that's the question, in order for information to be brought back to this committee, does that need to be sent to council, or could we just ask staff to bring that back?
Just ask staff to bring it in.
So is there a motion to have staff bring it back to the committee, Mr. Booster?
On that particular one, to bring that information back, but that would be fine, because, like I said, this is one, and I know we have percentages and limits, but I'm just suggesting that maybe we need to expand that to have a little more impervious surface so the ground will soak up a little more of this water rather than forcing it out to the street.
You basically like to revisit some things that have been in place for a while.
So the motion, as I understand it, is then to ask staff to bring back information to this committee regarding what we currently have in place and...
And I can amend that so that it would, to amend the second, that we ask staff to review that and then come back next month.
Happy to do that. Other comments from the committee? Ask the call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion passes 4-0.
Okay. Okay, number five, that Coleman Boulevard corresponding overlay district be held in abeyance until traffic, public safety, and density issues are resolved.
Mr. Bustos, I would just ask for a little bit more specificity what you're asking for.
Okay, I think that we know that the Coleman Boulevard bids were off. We know there's been, as Paul brought up, we need to get in and put drainage along Coleman Boulevard, even if we have to scavenge that money from the failed Coleman Boulevard bids to improve that drainage. But I think all that, until it's fixed, we need to not approve more and more, especially the density, increasing traffic. Increasing traffic and a drainage problem. So I'm not saying to outright cancel it or do away with it, but I think we need to hold it in advance until we have some of these things correct. Does that pretty much explain this?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Garvis. Can we get a second first for discussion?
Well, I can't second what I don't want to quite understand. So, Mr. Moore, how you doing?
I guess we'll let that motion sit. If it fails, it fails. You know. Mm-hmm. Keep it proper.
I will second it for discussion. Let's see how Mr. Garlish has some questions. I want to have a thorough discussion here, so I'll second for discussion.
Okay. My question is this. Joe, when you talk about Coleman Boulevard, you say you want to hold off on the overlay district. Let's zero in maybe like somebody finally bought the Fondue of Yours and the Oriental Cuisine, which is, you and I know, the old Kentucky Fried Chicken 100 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. That whole lot there. And they're now developing it as one piece. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, they are responsible for their whole stormwater retention. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how that impacts drainage on Coleman.
That one property?
Yeah, well, it's a couple different pieces as one piece. They're, you know, when you say you want to hold off because you're concerned about...
Yeah, but they're in progress. This is nuisance.
Well, I was just trying to use something as an example to help all of us because.
Well, let's say the boulevard.
Right.
Now the boulevard has a good pond in the back, but the fact of the matter is, water rushes out of the boulevard. As a matter of fact, sometimes early on the boulevard flooded the first floor in heavy rains. That goes to the street. on Vincent Drive. You know, there are a number of townhouses and houses all along there. With the impervious surface, that water's going to go to Vincent Drive and down to probably the Coleman Boulevard. There's some that goes to Shem Creek back there, but a lot of it's going to go to Coleman Boulevard.
Hey, and I'm not looking like I'm splitting hairs on the boulevard, because I recall this, Brad, Eric, you helped out. One of the things, unique things about it, when we did that section of Coleman, we took the time then to put in the proper stormwater for that section of Coleman, which the other parts of Coleman would match what's there now, correct? And I think probably, Joe, when it flooded, they had not tied it in yet to the system.
Well,
I know I'm getting deep, no pun intended. Yeah. But now the other problem, of course, now we've got larger pipes in that whole block section that are feeding in to smaller pipes just down from it, adjacent from the Mulcher Mills, which is not allowing it to go. Hence, again, even more of a reason to get the right size pipe up and down. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not on board with that.
Comments? Any comments from the public? Okay, let's call for the vote. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion fails 3-1.
Okay, and then the last is the development impact fees be increased to a level that would adequately mitigate growth. And I think in several meetings here we've heard that impact fees were not raised or have not been raised in 10 years, something like that. Is that correct?
It's about right. Sir.
About 10 years. You know, given the cost of doing business, of mitigating growth, all of our infrastructure, which the impact fees support, both traffic, police, fire, recreation, has fallen behind. And I think it's time to raise that so that growth somewhat pays for growth and it doesn't fall to the taxpayer to pay for more and more of the growth because impact fees are not there and they're 10 years behind. If MPW indexes their impact fees to population growth, if they grow, if the town grows 2%, impact fees grow 2%, and I think that's a sound way to do it. But right now, I think we're behind, and we need to work on things to mitigate growth, and we need to increase impact fees in order to do that.
So Mr. Bustos is here.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so that I'm putting that in the form of a motion that we pass staff to come back with a recommendation of where the impact fees should be.
Second.
I'll second that for the sake of discussion and follow that. Joe, I don't know if you're aware, I know Mr. Haney asked for that both in transportation and in recreation as far as impact fees. And I know Mr. Moore can speak up, but he and staff are already going to look at all our impact fees, transportation alone by itself and the others as they fall in, and get that to us so we can see where we are.
Yeah, well, and this just adds the you know, the planning portion of that. If they were specific for recreation and transportation, this would add the plan. But it's an overall review. I think it's time. It's time. And we're vying for money all over the place, and I think part of it is here. We need to go past it.
Smith, any comment at this point?
I won't be supporting any of the increases at this time. I think the staff's done an outstanding job with our budget this year. We've been able to achieve some significant accomplishments in the budget and minimal comments. I won't be supporting this.
Thank you. Comments from the public? Sir.
James Patrick Arnold of 25 Beverly Road, and I serve as the Government Affairs Director for the Charleston Trident Association of Realtors. And as the voice of the real estate industry in the Lowcountry, We cannot support the proposed arbitrary ban on multifamily apartments, ban on ADUs, increased setbacks, changes to the Coleman Boulevard and corresponding overlay districts, or tax increase in the form of developmental impact fees. Mount Pleasant has a major housing affordability problem, and here we are debating a ban on the only affordable housing options in the town. What does that say about the town that's willing to ban something that citizens desperately need for its teachers, first responders, who can't afford to stay here? Regardless of one's opinion of the aesthetics of apartments or ADUs or how it affects the character of the town, all experts agree Mount Pleasant desperately needs more apartments and housing options. I'm asking you not to put personal preferences ahead of real-world problems facing your policemen, firefighters, and teachers. If traffic is your concern, the experts agree that you don't have too many people in the town. You have too many people commuting into the town because they're priced at the market here. On behalf of the Realtors Association, I beg you to reject this plan to make housing more unaffordable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnie. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
This is the second time. I'm Philip Ward with the Charles Humber Association, and we just want to pledge our support with the Realtors. I don't want to repeat what he said, but we're on board. He's very supportive and urge you to reject all these proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any others?
Just for clarity's sake, this I take you understand this to be just like transportation recreation. You're going to come back with what we have and any possible suggestions or recommendations. I'm in support of that. I'm not sitting here supporting any kind of impact fee as I voted it down a couple years ago on that 5-4 vote.
And I would also support the motion with the caveat tomorrow, but you said earlier today, which is because of the budget season that we're in, if this becomes something that you cannot get by next month, just to let us know, and don't want to create extra work for you during this busy time, so please let us know if there's a problem getting it by next month. Okay, thank you. Yes, sir. One last comment.
Jim Davis, 3537 East Higgins. I just have one question for clarity on the request to look at impact fee. I'm struggling to understand what is the problem that is trying to be solved, what criteria will be used by the staff to assess, what should that number be different, if so, how much or how much more, how much less, what criteria can be used to determine the parameters used to make that assessment?
I think a good one, Mr. DeMora, if you may, on the transportation, because that's one where we're at 60%, because we've overstudied that one. So maybe you can help out with that response.
To answer the question, that's good, very good. In general, what happens in order to determine impact fee is we have to partake in a study to use transportation. There's a transportation study which estimates the impact on the system and what the transportation system requirements are going to be over the course of X amount of time, say 30 years. And from that, it estimates what kind of new arterials, what new roadways are going to be necessary, how much they cost, and also prioritizes which roadways should be taken on more quickly. You take all that information, you move it forward, and it gives you a number of how to recoup that amount of money as best as possible through an impact fee. And that's the methodology that's typically used. It's the one that is defensible in a court of law. And what we'll do is we'll do that with transportation, and we'll use some kind of similar methodology to follow the other communities.
Other comments on the committee? Go ahead and call the vote. All in favor of the motion for staff to bring back information regarding impact fees, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Yay. Motion passes 3-1. Who's else, Jim? Any others?
I think we're going to see. No, that is it. And I appreciate the real estate community's comments. However, over they weren't here for some of the discussions about ADUs and short-term rentals. And actually, short-term rentals have proven to be so profitable that we have lost long-term rentals because they've been turned into short-term rentals because people can make a lot more money. And I understand that. But please don't cloak yourself in affordable or attainable or I want to do something for the common guy when you're not. You're just not doing it. So with that, yeah, I'm good.
Thank you, Mr. Bustos. All right, that ends our agenda. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job, sir.
Well, I agree with you.